So now that we have set the scene, now that the choir has brought us in, now that Jack has read the gospel, now that our young people have showered us with confetti, it should not be that hard to imagine the feeling. The feeling of being in Jerusalem on the day that Jesus rode in. To imagine the sun warm on the back of your neck, the dust of the earth between your toes, the smell of figs and olives from the nearby market stalls. And everywhere, everywhere people. People holding palms and singing, smiling at strangers, jostling each other for a sight of Jesus, who would come at last, in the name of the Lord. Now imagine this, what it might be like to be a faithful Pharisee in that crowd, a faithful Pharisee who'd studied the law and the prophets, learned the rituals and rhythms of the temple, and practiced sacrifices seen and unseen for the glory of God. A faithful Pharisee who'd done all that one could do, learned all that one could learn, and who'd one day stumbled on God incarnate. We can't know how the Pharisees in the crowd came to know Jesus. It's not in the text that we have, but we can't know, but maybe it was something like this. Maybe they'd heard the stories in the temple of the 12-year-old who astonished everyone on the teaching steps. Maybe they'd been in Nazareth at synagogue the day that Jesus picked up the scroll and told the assembled faithful that scripture had been fulfilled in their hearing, that he was the one anointed to bring good news to the poor, liberation to the captives, and freedom to the oppressed. Maybe they'd been in the crowd when Jesus told the man living with paralysis to pick up his mat and walk. We can't know how they encountered Jesus, but we can imagine what it would be like to meet the one you longed for, the one who made all the stories true. Here, now. At last, here is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. We can imagine how they would have copied his sayings, delighted in his teachings, smile, that tight-lipped smile, the one that comes when you swallow a laugh because you just picked up a scripture reference no one else got. We can imagine what it felt like. And so we can imagine how they'd try to help, how faithful Pharisees would go about welcoming in the reign of God, and how they would be so frustrated with the crowd that they would ask Jesus to order his disciples to stop. If I were a Pharisee, which, given my social location, is the place I would most likely end up in most Jesus stories, and I were making a plan to assure the welcome of the reign of God, I would think about my context, soaked in story and law and rhythms and rituals and traditions that had stood the test of time. And after that, I would think about my world, pressed under the thumb of an extractive empire, subject to violence at any time, surviving through negotiation and bureaucratic compromise more often than not. And thinking about that, I would make a plan. It would be a good plan. Stakeholder consultations and house meetings, persuasive one-on-ones with powerful people who could be brought on side. There would be diagrams, and the first century Aramaic equivalent of PowerPoint presentations, and many phases, perhaps not fully Gantt charted out, but at the very least identified. There would be careful conversations around cooking fires in the tent city around Jerusalem, handshakes and knowing glances and waiting to act until we already knew that the outcome would be in our favor. There would be a plan. And so I can imagine what it would feel like when that plan gets upended by a crowd of peasants shouting out the big secret to the whole world. Blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. Are you kidding me? That is phase 4B language. We are only in phase 2C right now, Jesus in the guise of a stranger. That's the point. We're only people who understand what's going on are people who are the people who already know that the king on the colt is a story you only find in Zechariah. Crowds like this aren't supposed to recognize Jesus as king in Jerusalem for another 18 to 24 months. We haven't even fully gotten Nicodemus on side. What are these people doing? They're gonna blow the whole thing. So when you're thinking like that, you can imagine how a faithful Pharisee might find themselves going to Jesus, going to love incarnate, going to God, to get him to tell the crowds to zip it. And this, friends, is the infuriating part. It'll get liberating if we can hang on till the end, but first it gets infuriating. Because this is the part where it turns out that the faithful Pharisee maybe missed the point. You see, the faithful Pharisee, like many of us, grew up in a system where having a plan was supposed to keep you safe. Where you learned to lead in a world of negotiation and bureaucratic compromise. A world where your job was keeping your people safe from centurions for another day, another month, another year. Hoping those days and months and years could string together into a lifetime. Maybe not a lifetime of liberation, but a lifetime nonetheless. And then along came Jesus. And everything was going to change in 18 to 24 months when we're ready for it. And then there's this crowd, a year and a half early, disrupting what was supposed to be a small public witness, an echo of an old story from a prophet, clear for the wise, unreadable for the foolish. But the crowds caught on. And these idiots are going to get someone killed. And so you go to Jesus, begging him to stop them before the soldiers come. And Jesus doesn't stop them. Not only does he not stop them, he wants more. I tell you, even if the crowds were silent, the stones would shout. As though throwing away the very careful plan was the whole point. As though the whole point was less about careful compromise under Roman rule and more about liberation for all people in all places, all ways. As though the whole point was less about changing who was in power and more about ending all extractive systems. As though the whole point was less about a plan for some and more about a world where all of creation, from the birds of the sky to the rocks themselves, thrives, free from domination forever. That's a terrifying plan. It's a terrifying plan because it cannot be controlled. You cannot Gantt chart your way to the restoration and repair of the cosmos any more than you can stop a stone in song. And the fear of it brings the faithful Pharisee to his knees. Here's where it gets liberating. Jesus already knows. He looks in the face of the faithful Pharisee, fractured and frozen in fear, and tells him again, If every tongue were stilled, the noise would still continue. The rocks and stones themselves would start to sing. I know, beloved. I know the risk. I know the cost. I know the plans you have for me, and they were never plans that were yours to make. Now that you know the stakes, you also know that no fist tightened to secure its own way could ever create the future I promise. Open your fist. Lay down your plan. Pick up a palm. Rejoice with creation today. Tomorrow will worry about itself.